Welcome, everyone. This is Fit as a Fiddle Plus. I'm Kathy Benner. I'm a passive income mentor, but I firmly believe that health comes before wealth. So we're going to talk all about health today. And my co-host is Rita Brewer, and I'm going to let her tell you a little bit about herself. And then we're going to go over and we're going to chat with Dr. Sunil Bach, and we're going to learn all about mindfulness. So Rita, over to you and tell us what it is that you bring to the table.
Thank you, Kathy, and thank you, Dr. Sunil, for being here. I'm Rita Brewer. I'm a physician assistant and diabetes reversal coach. I'm glad to be here, as always.
Yes, I love it. I love it. We're going to talk with Dr. Sunil Bach tonight, and this is her third time being on our podcast. We just love what she does, and she always has something new going on, so we're excited to talk with her. She is an author, an entrepreneur, a mindfulness meditation teacher, and a professor in the field of health sciences. She serves as a full-time faculty member at North Park University and owns a private wellness practice, Wellness with Sunil. Additionally, Dr. Bach founded the nonprofit organization CNC Wellness, Inc., through which she provides health and wellness resources to communities aiming to improve both physical and mental well-being. With over 25 years of experience, she's assisted clients in developing healthier lifestyles. Dr. Bach holds a PhD and certification as an athletic trainer. I didn't know that. ATC. And she completed the Mindfulness Meditation Teacher Certification Program under Jack Kornfield and Tara Brock. Beyond her professional endeavors, she is married and values the support of her family and children. Welcome, Sunil. Gosh, I love it.
Thank you. Thank you.
My big question, because I see behind you, your virtual screen is overcoming obstacles with mindfulness. This is kind of new to a lot of folks. So how does the neuroscience explain the benefits of mindfulness on mental health?
Oh, it's a beautiful question. Thank you so much, Kathy. I just want to say thank you, Kathy, and thank you, Rita, for having me again for the third time as part of the podcast. It's always wonderful to be with you. It's just beautiful to share with like-minded individuals, and you know, for us to be able to promote health and well-being is just, it's so needed. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah. And as for, there's one word you really can't see on my screen that's part of my background, and it's the word resilience. It's actually the cover of my new book, and the book is titled Resilience, Overcoming Obstacles with Mindfulness. So
hey.
My screensaver is a great one. However, it's just missing the top part of it.
Okay.
So, and that's a beautiful question to look at how, what is the neuroscience or the neurobiology behind how mindfulness can be of help, especially with mental health. And part of it has to do with our central nervous system. There's two components of the central nervous system, the parasympathetic and the sympathetic. And so maybe you've already heard of these two aspects of our nervous system. The parasympathetic system is kind of the rest and digest aspect of the central nervous system. It helps kind of create some calm and balance, kind of helps us bring things back down so that we're a little bit more calm, grounded. The sympathetic aspect of our nervous system is kind of the fight, flight, or freeze. And I raise my fists because if we feel threatened or on alert, we very impulsively, and rightfully so, as part of our survival mechanism, we go to that sympathetic system. And it sometimes get a bad rap. However, it's really part of our survival mechanism. And we need that. If, you know, if a lion was to come into the room that we're in right now, we need to be able to either fight, flight, or we may freeze, which is not the best, but that may happen as well. So that aspect of our central nervous system, the sympathetic, is the aspect that typically is heightened. And so where mindfulness comes in is it kind of engages the parasympathetic, the rest and digest system, helps us to feel more grounded, more settled. And it actually allows us to be able to switch from that primitive reactive brain to more of the logical thinking brain. And I point in my head because the primitive brain is kind of like toward the back, the middle and back of the head. And then our prefrontal cortex is kind of toward the front, the frontal part of our brain. So when we can practice something like mindfulness, and there are many other tools, mindfulness is just one. However, when we practice mindfulness, it eases us into that rest and digest. We can feel more grounded, more calm, also switches us from the survival brain to the prefrontal cortex, the logical thinking brain. And those are all aspects that can help benefit our mental health. It's a long answer to a short question.
No, I love it because the whole time that you're talking, I'm thinking, now you coach folks, of course, on this. And so what kind of advice are you coaching them to do?
Sure. So a lot of the clients that I coach are leaders. I just did a
Okay.
podcast on mindful resilience and in leadership. And so what I advocate for is looking at those mechanisms, some of those tips, tools, strategies to help us to drop into that parasympathetic system. There's a whole theory out there. As a scientist, it was part of my research was to look at this theory called polyvagal theory, whereby engaging again that parasympathetic system that we can again kind of enhance, cultivate our ability to feel more grounded and settled and to be able to think more logically. So that becomes instrumental, right? When we're acting in capacities, managing other individuals, acting in leadership capacities, it's really not only just beneficial, it's crucial to be able to utilize kind of shift from that survival brain to that logical thinking brain. So I'll talk to my clients about mindfulness practices. And the thing about it is, it's very simple. There are things I have some clients say, you know, I really enjoy working with Sanel because she helps us to do the things that we know we need to do. You know, it's just a nice reminder. Like being here with like-minded individuals like yourself is such a wonderful community because we encourage each other, right? We may know, however, we kind of hold up that mirror to help encourage each other. So I may advocate for some tips and tools and strategies that I teach my clients as part of their leadership for them to drop in. One is just the breath, you know, mindfulness of breath. You may hear someone say, take a breath, you know, take 3 breaths, the inhale. It's always followed by an exhale. And in that inhale, the body takes in just as much as it needs, and then it releases anything it no longer needs, even in that moment. So just mindfulness of the breath, of the inhale and the exhale can be really, again, a very powerful strategy.
I think this is, sorry, Kathy, you want to go?
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, this is so needed, like more today than ever before, right? Because we lived in such a stressed out culture right now. We're go, 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 do, do, do. We don't stop. We work too hard and we're overstressed and exhausted. And, you know, this just throws everything out of balance. So I think, you know, this needs to be taught in so many arenas and especially in the workplace too. So can you share, Doc, how, when you're teaching people in leadership positions, you know, how do you see this type of work transform what they're able to do as leaders?
Oh, absolutely. So when we're working as leaders, again, we're, like you said, there's can be very demanding culture. So helping to kind of shift the climate in the workplace, you know, is it always things are on fire, we're always putting out fire, as well as the culture, you know, how do we respond to each other? So we begin to kind of build those bridges, so to speak, of being able to respond versus react. So, and that's a really important tool. Again, you know, something that's really important is to be able to respond versus react. So going back to 3 of the tips that I typically use or tools is mindfulness of breath, mindfulness of our thoughts, and mindfulness of emotions. A fourth one would be mindfulness of body, because sometimes we embody things and we don't think about that. And these are all different practices that we I teach in my sessions. I have a course called Mindfulness in the Workplace. So I go into different either corporate or nonprofit settings and teach these tools to leaders and managers, and then as they work with their teams. So that's just one example. Mindfulness of breath, mindfulness of body, mindfulness of thoughts and emotions.
So,
Yeah.
what changes occur in the brain when someone practices these mindfulness tips? What actually changes?
Oh, that's another really beautiful question. So it's part of our neural chemistry or neural wiring, right? So it's kind of like you're building a muscle. If you think of it like lifting weights, And you can see like the physiological changes that occur with lifting weight. Some of my Buddhist friends would say, by practicing mindfulness, you begin to cultivate that sense of feeling more grounded. Again, shifting from that primitive survival brain, go, 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 do, 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 to the more logical thinking brain. So now, how do I want to show up and respond to this situation that 2 weeks ago might have put me on alert, or 2 months ago, put it that way, give at least 8 weeks, cultivating this practice. 2 months ago, it might have really put me on alert. Now, that would have caused an increase in blood pressure, increase in heart rate, all those physiological responses. After continuing to practice, we begin to cultivate a more calm response versus reacting. So we have the similar situation, but again, now we're not in survival mode. We're able to kind of shift to that prefrontal cortex. We can approach that situation. Even though things may be on fire, our biological response to it is much different. So we're kind of rewiring, Kathy. You asked, like, what's happening with the brain? So it's not just the brain, it's actually kind of below the brain as well. It's more peripheral. So we have, and systemic. So we have the heart rate, the blood pressure being affected. Even our muscles might be affected. We don't feel as much tension, as well as the brain itself kind of being able to think more clearly, logically, versus that survival primitive brain. So it's kind of rewiring that neural communication.
So it does help regulate stress and anxiety on a neurological level.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Can it
Absolutely.
be?
And there's a lot
Can
of
it?
research that supports that notion that it helps to reduce stress.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
Can it improve your memory and cognitive function as well?
That's a really great question. I'd have to do a little more research with regards to, being able to speak confidently. There's a part of me that wants to say yes, because once we're able to drop into that rest and digest, we're not in so much of an alert mode. However, I want to be able to look at the research a little bit closer to feel more confident in saying absolutely,
Mm-hmm.
100% yes. I
It
know
makes
there's,
sense that it would. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
yeah. I think there's a lot that goes into it. It's not just one, and that's why I say mindfulness is just one tool. You talked about losing 70 pounds, so some of that, having the connections and the support, you and Rita were having a conversation before we really began about what that's been like and how you've, what your journey has been like. So there's many things that come into play with what we experience as the human condition and how our biology responds to that, our cognitive functions respond to that. And so I feel like nutrition is another part of that.
Absolutely, yes.
How much sleep are we getting? How much physical activity are we getting? So we all know this, right? But these are all various components of health and well-being that we put them in silos, but they really do interact together.
I love that this type of field is becoming more prevalent in the workplace and in corporations because it makes it okay. It gives it that acceptance factor, right? Because I mean, I trained in, conventional medicine in the early 90s when it was still, a dog eat dog man's world. I can run on 4 hours of sleep and still do surgery all the next day. It's like you're tough and there's no complaining, there's no whining. Everybody's just got to be tough, tough, tough. And now look at us. Like we have higher burnout rates than ever before, right? So I would love to see this type of work more in the medical community and medical schools and residency programs too, because it, and students, medical students, PA students, because it teaches that self-care to be able to have tools and strategies to use to overcome these obstacles, right, that we go through every day, and especially our, medical community is so high stress and we're just, so overwhelmed. So I love that this is being taught a little bit more in these arenas.
Yeah, I agree 100%, Rita. It's been great as a professor teaching, pre-PA students. I teach at the undergraduate level, so a lot of my students are going on to whether it's physical therapy school, chiropractic school, med school, dentistry. So kind of, and then I taught this past spring a mindfulness class for those students. So it's great, like you said, and having the research. My actual research population was the nursing population. And I didn't realize before I did my research how prevalent burnout is, was, and still is in the nursing population. I also see it in my field in athletic training, sports medicine. So it's been great for me. It's really motivating for me and inspiring to continue to advocate for these things because, like you said, it's so needed. And even in the general population.
I'm sure
So,
every
yeah.
field, because just corporations in
Yes.
general, it's such a high stress, environment. It's a production, you got to produce, right? And go all the time. So, so
Well, and
needed.
even in the medical field, and Rita, you can attest to this, some of our nurses and doctors are the worst of pushing and going and trying to, meet all those quotas.
And that's the expectations that we have, and as far as, production in the office, there's no such thing as being able to just sit and, talk to a patient for, when you have 10 minute appointments. It's like you can't stay and talk and relax for 30 minutes and conversate and strategize with people, maybe a new consultation, you're lucky if you get, 40 minutes to an hour. But it's very, very high demand all the time. So I was just at a podcast last week, and we were talking about burnout too. So I looked up some of the rates, and it was like between nurses and doctors, between 40 and 60%,
Oh my.
are suffering with burnout. I mean, this is huge. It's gotten worse since COVID, and the climate is just really toxic. And we're humans, and we're not machines. We're not robots, right?
I know. Dr. Sanel, what role does neuroplasticity play in developing the long-term mindfulness habits? Because I know that's the key, is to try to develop those habits so that it is your first go-to, not your last go-to.
But
It's
define neuroplasticity first for us.
Oh, sure.
That's
Yes,
great.
sure. Neuroplasticity, many, many decades ago, we used it. It's a term that just really looks at the brain's ability to change. We thought that once you reach a certain age, cognitively, once you were there, say maybe your 20s, that the brain was kind of stuck there. I mean, you could learn new things kind of gradually, but pretty much your cognitive ability, like your IQ per se, would be kind of stuck there. Now we realize within the last few decades that the brain can continue to enhance and grow, and we can learn new things. And so that's a really great finding. And neuroplasticity is one of those things, like, again, I'll go back to muscle because the physicality people understand kind of like lifting weights. You can see the different changes in the muscle. Same thing with the brain. So practicing mindfulness, again, just one tool. By doing that, it can help us to cultivate. It becomes more of a habit. One of the things I like to do is meditate in the morning or go for a walk, And so we start to kind of build that muscle up, get up in the morning and maybe do anywhere between a 5 minute to a 45 minute meditation, depending on how much time I have. And that pose could be in a cross-legged pose, or it could be laying in my bed, flat on my back. So again, there's some flexibility there. And I love teaching that because sometimes we feel like it has to be done a certain way or not at all. It's kind of an all or none. Well, not so much. I mean, being able to do those things, it does enhance our ability, again, to be able to drop into more of a homeostatic, into our day in more of a homeostatic, balanced way. So, and neuroplasticity, again, the more we do these things, we can kind of cultivate it becoming more of a habit. And the brain can learn and be enhanced and be able to improve over time. It's not that we're a certain age and I'm kind of locked in. The old, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. That kind of goes out the window because neuroplasticity says absolutely you can.
So how does it help with actually creating these habits? Are you making new pathways in the brain to where you automatically go to your new practice and not? I know me, I'm trying to change how I eat and I keep slipping back into those old habits so easy.
Right. And that's just it. It's almost as though you're building kind of new pathways, right? So you think about a road, if we're putting our path in the woods, right? And when we're digging that new path, it might be rugged, and you might have to have people continue to walk on that path many, many times. So for us as human beings, we have to continue to practice that same routine, that new routine, many, many times until it becomes, a really well-trodden path. And you can see it in the middle of the forest, Well, if you haven't had that, you haven't done that before, you are creating kind of rewiring some new neural chemistry there, some new neural wiring happening. And I want to encourage you, sessions like this, again, those reminders, we continue to stay encouraged and motivated to maintain those practices and know that relapse, the psychology behind it a little bit. That's not really my field, although I had a minor in psychology. However, again, they intertwine, but relapses are normal. It's part of our humanness that we will relapse. And if you haven't, just keep on living. That's the way I say it. And I say that with all positivity because it is part of our human experience. We feel like kind of once we arrive, okay, I'm here, I'm there, I'm on top of the mountain, and I'm just gonna stay there. I'm like, no, you may go back down into a valley, and then you may go right back up, or you may go halfway, and that's okay. Continuing to, and that's why I continue to do what I do. I have, monthly sessions for clients. I teach, I was at like Rita, I was at a podcast with dentists last month, the Lorain County Dental Society, teaching on mindfulness and mental health for dentists because of guess what? Burnout in the dental profession. So just understanding that this is part of our humanness and that there's nothing wrong. We go back to that polyvagal theory, our central nervous system. When we feel on alert, that sympathetic system is going to engage, and you might not think clearly. You might forget and go back to that habit of what you used to do. However, being able to come back into that grounded, settled calm, we can kind of go back to that logical thinking brain, which will remind you, yes, Kathy, speaking to yourself, you're changing, you're developing this new habit. So kind of that self-compassion, going back to, what can I do to kind of continue? I made a mistake, I'm gonna lapse, and I can get right back on the horse and kind of keep going.
Yeah, for the most part, and again, I'm using my example of my weight loss most recently, but for the most part, I can stay on, as I like to say, the straight and narrow, and eat all the right stuff at all the right times and do the intermittent fasting. But it doesn't take much for somebody to say, "Come on, extreme." And I'm like, "Okay, this one time won't hurt." And then I beat myself up because I'm like, "Oh, I knew better, and I got off the path." And so I'm better. I'm doing better, but I still catch myself going down the wrong path.
And it's part of our humanness. As the mindfulness practice comes out, if the origin is the Buddhist tradition. And so I say I'm a Christian with Buddhist tendencies. So my Buddhist friends would just say that we have 10,000 joys and 10,000 sorrows. Another way of looking at it is it's two sides of the same coin. To say that I'm always going to be, right on 100%, it's kind of as though you're not going to acknowledge the other side of the coin. And it's all part of that humanness. And it's not so much that you're doing so many things wrong as, like you said, just being able to get right back on it. So I want to commend you. Congratulations. And keep up
And
the good.
it's okay to have ice cream sometimes. It's okay.
Absolutely.
And when you go on vacation and a certain place and you want to splurge on certain things, but it's just always coming back to, the healthy routine is the important thing, right? So
Yeah, I just need to come back to the healthy routine more often than I don't. That's the key.
And you
And I'm doing well. I'm doing well. I mean, the numbers show it,
That's what I was going to say. You would not have lost 70 pounds if you were not doing it right.
Yeah.
There's no
Numbers
way.
show it. So,
Absolutely.
now, can mindfulness practices help with physical health issues like chronic pain, inflammation? Tell us about that.
Yes. So mindfulness itself, mindfulness of the body, and how we hold pain. So it may not change the pain per se. However, my mentors and mindfulness teachers, one of the best ways that they've explained it is that it can change our relationship with the pain. So instead of pushing the pain away, the way we look at pain in the body, and honoring, okay, pain, it's almost as though you're talking with the pain. And it shifts how we feel about the pain. And so even changing that relationship, it opens up, how we relate to it, what we do about it, and how we even hold the pain in our body. So for example, maybe I have pain in my shoulders. It's just stress and tension, And so instead of saying, oh gosh, let's even talking about it, oh, I hunch even more. Oh, stuck on this is my shoulders. I just hate all of this in my shoulders and in my neck. And so almost as though I'm fighting the pain. So what's that going to do? More than likely, I'm going to tense up a little
Make it
bit
worse.
more. So my relationship with that pain is more of a struggle. So it may actually cause an intensified, aspect of the pain versus having some calm, breathing with that, breathing with my shoulders, working with the body, noticing what does that really feel like? What am I really feeling? Is it naming the pain? Is it pain? Is it tightness? Is it tension? Is it prickly? So our mindfulness practice helps us to kind of investigate and explore what's happening in the body. And it causes just a little shift. So there are studies out there that says that mindfulness can actually help decrease pain. I think it's very subjective. It depends on the person. It depends on the severity, how long they've been, dealing with the pain, what type of pain. However, like I said, there is research that indicates that it can help decrease the pain.
Well,
And
like this.
I love how my mentors really say it changes our relationship with that pain.
Yeah, and it moves you back into that parasympathetic nervous system where
Yes.
all healing takes place in that
Yes.
space, right?
Yes.
Healing does not take place in the fight or flight mode, right? So,
Exactly.
yeah, that's
Exactly.
well, I know yoga is really good for me for pain relief because it helps. I do a lot of breathing, it helps bring me back that parasympathetic state, and I feel so much better. It's like, well, and all of a sudden, like my spine just totally realigns itself, right? Like almost I had a chiropractic adjustment because I've relaxed into it, and then your body can do what it needs to do.
Exactly. And I love how you said that too, Rita, that the body can do what it needs to do. Even if we go back to the breath, we think about it. This whole podcast, we've been breathing and we've not really thought about it, but the body will breathe itself. It will bring in the oxygen that it needs, and it will release the carbon dioxide that it no longer needs. And so, similar in those situations, by just giving the body a little more oxygen, a little bit more relaxation, like you said, that kind of rest, digest, the healing aspect can really kick in.
So we talked so much about mindfulness and the benefits of it. I'm sure all of this is in your book. Is there anything else in your book that has been like a focus of the book that you really want people to know about that they can that you wanted to the main message that you wanted to get across with this book?
Yeah, so this book is really more of a workbook. And so if you're looking to do maybe like a 21-day journey or a 40-day journey, there's 40 affirmations at the back of the book. And at the end of each chapter, it's a workbook. There are reflection questions. So it really becomes a bit more of a personal journey, and a tool to kind of help, again, cultivate your own sense of growth. Maybe it's starting or continuing a mindfulness practice. Or maybe there's some other aspect of personal or professional growth and development that an individual wants to pursue. Again, like I said, there's an opportunity at the end of each chapter to answer some questions and to really reflect on, what is your own personal journey and how would you like to enhance that? So it's more of a workbook and it's pocketbook size. So you can fit it in your book bag or in your pocketbook. It's just the perfect size to kind of carry along
Nice.
with you.
So do you incorporate that with your teaching programs?
Yes, I
That's
have.
perfect.
Yeah. So we've been doing quite a bit on the book tour since February. We did a launch in Chicago back in February. We just did a launch in Columbus, Ohio in June. And we've done some virtual launches as well. So it's been really great to be able to share this tool. I think that's, like you said, what we need: tools, tips, strategies, and continuing to cultivate whatever those tools are, just kind of like bringing us back to those things that can be really helpful. So.
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, I'm in a book club, and it's we always read a fiction book. I would love to convince my book club to actually do this instead. Just one month, just something different. I don't know if I can convince them or not. I'll approach them and see. And I'm kind of local to Dr. Sunil Bach. I'm in Kennow, Winchester, and you're in Lancaster, is that right?
I'm
Okay.
home this summer. Now I teach in Chicago August through May, but this
Okay.
summer
Well,
I'll be in.
okay, because the book club, we meet in person just right around Kennow, Winchester or Lancaster. So
Oh, nice.
yeah. So yeah, I'll have to explore that. That would be a great opportunity.
I'm happy
I
to
love
help.
that. Yes, I love the fact that the book is kind of a workbook type layout where, you can actually chart your progress, if you will, as you go through the book. I like that a lot.
That's
Now, how
something
can beginners?
everybody needs it. Like it's
Oh,
like there, I can't
absolutely.
think of one area of life or profession that can't benefit from it, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, in everything we do, it affects everything. It affects us all. How can beginners train their brains to develop a consistent mindfulness practice?
And the beginner's mind is pretty awesome. There is actually a concept called the beginner's mind. When you really first drop in, like the breath, like I've never really thought about the fact that I'm breathing, like I know I'm doing it. And then you begin to feel that sense of calm, kind of what Rita referred to earlier when she does her yoga practice. When once you feel that beginner's mind, it's almost, okay, I want a little bit more of that. And I remember when I first practiced mindfulness, I was like, oh, this is great. I'm so calm. I'm so relaxed. Actually, I'd fall asleep. And I thought I was doing something wrong. And then I heard from my mentors and teachers that no, that's exactly what your body needed in that moment. You were actually being very kind to yourself, is what it needed. And so some things that a beginner could do is just simply do something that is easy for them. Like maybe it's mindfulness of the breath, or maybe it's going out for a walk in nature for just like 5 minutes. Two or 3 minutes, even something that's very doable. As part of my research, I had the nurses, I asked them to use the Calm app. And so it was just a 10-minute Calm app. I asked them to do it most days throughout the week. They didn't have to have a mindfulness or meditation practice previously. Actually, we really didn't want them to because we wanted to see if this intervention would be beneficial. And so it was something that they could follow and that they could engage in anytime throughout the day they felt. Most of them did it in the morning, though, because it was just easiest to do in the morning. And so something like that, whether they're maybe following an app, I do a lot of guided meditations, mindfulness practices, something that's easy, something that's very doable for a beginner, that's what I would recommend. I wouldn't say you have to do this type of practice only. I would say there are many types of practices, mindful walking, even mindful eating, mindfulness of the breath, mindfulness of the body, following an app, again, going out for a walk. It could be as simple as just taking a 2 minute, actually there's like, even on my watch now, my Fitbit, there's like a 2 minute breathing, just 2 minutes. That's an act of mindfulness. Again, it takes us from that survival brain to that logical thinking brain, from the stress, the sympathetic system to the parasympathetic system. And
I
it
often
is.
recommend the breathe app as well. That teaches you box breathing and the 4-7-8 breathing as well. That helps bring us into that parasympathetic nervous system. I need to use it more myself. Notice that. And Insight Timer is a great app as well. So those are have a lot of good calming things. So they have free versions of these as well as paid versions too. But yeah, there's a lot of good tools and resources out there.
Think it's just a matter of just continuing to remind each other. Like you said, there's a plethora of apps and resources. Again, it's part of the reason I really enjoy working with my clients. And being in community with podcasts like yours, Kathy and Rita, because we remind each other. It's just part of our human experience. We forget. We are busy. We have lots of things going on. So to be able to support and stay in connection, that could be an act of mindfulness, community. My Buddhist friends call it a sangha. Being in community with like-minded individuals who continue to support and help you, that's an act too of self-care and mindfulness. staying connected.
I love that. I do have a big question. Is there any recent scientific discoveries about mindfulness that surprised you?
Mindfulness, the mechanisms. So how does it work? You talked about the neurobiology. There's other theories. One of the theories is the polyvagal theory. That's what I refer to other, the engagement of the central nervous system. That's mechanistic, like what's happening in the body or in our biology or in our neuroscience, as to how mindfulness works. There's other aspects that are more spiritual in nature. It's not so much new, but when I was reading and researching, I found it fascinating, the no self theory. Now, again, this gets a bit spiritual,
Okay.
that we are all, if you think about it from a metaphysics perspective, and I'm going to get a little deep here. You think about, okay, we know that we have fingers, toes, things like that. But if you were to think about the body from on a cellular level, my hand, then there's the skin, and underneath the skin, there's capillaries and there's cells. And then if we would put the cells underneath the microscope, we can go down another level, the microbiology, and then we can even open up the cells and look at in between the cells, the organelles. And then we can even look, the atoms, even at that level. And then we can even go even deeper. And what would be underneath there is just kind of like space, energy, So when we think about who we really are, from the macrocosm to the microcosm, and how we're all connected with regards to energy, again, that no self theory. I really love that because it points to something bigger and grander than ourselves. So,
Yes.
yeah. So again, it's not so much the empirical knowledge or the scientific studies, the data, the research. I'm really fascinated equally, I would say probably not so much more, but definitely equally by the spiritual aspect of what's happening. Yeah.
That's beautiful. I love that. If you could give our listeners one overarching recommendation on how they could start, what would you tell them?
The recommendation would be to maybe three things. One is to start. Just simply start. Be committed to, okay, I'm not quite sure what I'm going to do or how I'm going to do it, but I commit to doing it. And even verbalizing that, I commit to doing something. Okay, so that's ground level one, just being able to commit to it. Verbal, personal agreement. Number two would be to seek out, like we said earlier, whether it's an app, a teacher, a mentor, showing up regularly for your podcast, being able to tap into it. And by showing up, I mean listening to the recording, continuing to nurture those things that we know we want to do, we desire to do. And then number three is seeking a community. So that way we have support. So have that commitment to do it, a verbal commitment. And that's okay if we do fall off because, again, that's part of our humanness. But just recommit. It's okay. Fall off and just recommit. And then looking for that teacher, mentor. And then staying in community because we can really support each other. I know that's been really helpful for me when I feel like I'm trying to do it all by myself. It's really, really hard. It's very challenging. However, in community, I feel like it elevates. We can do it together. So,
That's great.
Yes, I love that as well. Rita, go ahead.
No, I would say so. Yeah, we know that you have this mindfulness book. You're teaching about mindfulness in all types of arenas, but we know that you have a lot of other offerings as well. So, for some of the people who haven't heard our previous podcast, can you tell everybody a little bit about some of the other services that you offer with your practice as well?
Sure. Thank you so much, Rita. Actually, it's funny because I thought I wore my clinical jacket because I don't know if you can actually see it, but I work at I lease space at Fairfield Medical, which is in Lancaster, Ohio. So I'm also a clinician and I practice a technique called muscle activation. So I don't know, I thought we were talking about muscle activation today for a second. Muscle activation is a technique. It's a manual technique that helps to balance the body. muscles, there's over 200 muscles in the body. And this technique, it takes about a year to learn it. What we do is we help to activate muscles that are shut down. Muscles shut down due to trauma, it could be injury, it could even be stress. And so when clients come to me, I'm a muscle specialist. I'm a muscle
Okay.
specialist. And so I can look to see if a muscle is working properly or if it is shut down and not working. And the nice thing about it is I can help activate, turn it on right there on the table. So clients come to me and I'm pretty booked up this summer. But I can take on a few new clients. I'm booking right now for July and August. So if you're having body trauma or body discomfort, or you're feeling pretty good in your body, but and you want to continue to feel good in your body, maintain your muscle integrity, this technique helps to kind of communicate between the nerves and the muscle and keep the muscles activated. So it's a gentle technique. It feels really good on the body. And it's a way of kind of keeping the body going because things tend to kind of get out of whack.
That's wonderful. So how can people find you, Doc?
They can go to my website, Wellness with Sanel. That's wellness, Wellness with, and then my name, Sanel, Cenell. And they can schedule right from the website there, whether it's muscle activation, the mindfulness coaching, executive leadership coaching. They can also access a copy of the resilience book that was just published, or they can schedule a muscle activation technique treatment. So
Great. And your doctorate is in, is it neuroscience or
the doctorate is in health sciences.
health sciences? Okay.
Health sciences with a concentration in health and wellness promotion. Yeah. And so the published article was looking at investigating mindfulness meditation on reducing stress and improving self-compassion in the nursing population. So a long title, but yeah.
So needed.
Yes,
Absolutely.
absolutely.
Yeah.
Dr. Sunil Bach, thank you so much for being with us. We really appreciate you being here. You always bring so much information, and it just reminds me to go back and revisit all the good stuff that I should be doing. Yes.
Well,
Yeah.
thank you
Like
for
Rita said, yeah, sometimes life just gets in the way and we get carried away with all the stuff we feel we have to be doing.
yeah,
Yeah.
absolutely,
I
absolutely.
want to thank you both and just kind of extend some gratitude and appreciation for your generosity and showing up, month after month to be able to provide this information for your community. Thank you so much for continuing to promote health and well-being in our communities. Just having these conversations are crucial, and thank you for your commitment. It's a big commitment. I know as a business owner and author and, doing Zoom calls and podcasts, it's a big commitment. And so I really want you to pat yourselves on the back. And thank you so much for doing this.
Dr. Sunil Bach, thank
Pleasure.
you so much. And Rita, again, thank you for being with us today.
It was a
Again, I'm
pleasure.
Kathy Benner, and I have an international academy. You can find me at kathybenner.com. And Rita, tell folks how folks can reach you.
RitaBrewer.com. Everything is all there. Social media, email list, book a free call with me for your diabetes reversal journey. People don't know type 2 diabetes is reversible and preventable,
Yes.
guys.
Yes,
35
yes,
million
yes.
people do not be living with this. So there's a lot of work we can do. So reach out, book a free on my website.
Yes, absolutely. And again, tap into wellnesswithsanel.com and you'll see everything there, including her book.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you. See everybody soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye.